This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Welcome to the Press Pass here on KXL 109, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. We do some Red Sox as the Red Sox pitchers and catchers report to spring training. Some Celtics and Bruins here on this edition of the show. Appreciate you joining us for it. So we'll hear from Alex Cora, Chris Sale, and Eduardo Rodriguez as pitchers and catchers do report to JetBlue South down in Lee County, Florida. And Alex Cora is kind of bullish on the Red Sox, thinks that they are a contender. We'll get his definition of what that means in just a little bit. Red Sox, not a perfect team. I think there's no question about that. But certainly a team that I think is going to be much more competitive than last season. You look at this roster, and I think this is a group that's going to be able to pitch. I think it's a group that has some rotational depth this year, and I think that that's going to be a key thing for this Boston Red Sox team. And we'll start with the rotation as pitchers and catchers report. And Chris Sale is going to be out for at least another 3 months, in my view. Is going to probably be back around the All-Star break if you wanted to set a date. He would not set a timeline for his return. But you look at this rotation, and you have some solid depth, some solid arms. Eduardo Rodriguez at the head of the rotation. Nathan Eovaldi, of course, he's always struggled with injury issues. Martin Perez, Garrett Richards, that's the four who are locks. And then Nick Pivetta, acquired last year from the Phillies. He looked good. Tanner Houck looked great, and we'll get Alex Cora's thoughts on where he may fit into the rotation in just a little bit. And they have some depth in the bullpen as well. I'd like to have seen from Darwinson Hernandez. Matt Barnes may be the closer this year. And guys like Austin Bryce and Phillips Valdez impressed last season. And the Red Sox are a team that's likely to hit this year as well. I think this team has a chance to be competitive for a playoff, a wild card spot. Yankees rotation's a little bit off this year. Blue Jays are going to be good, and the Rays are always good, despite obviously that trade of Blake Snell to the San Diego Padres. So let's get into it with the Red Sox. How good can this team be as they start spring training? Here is Alex Cora.
We can contend in 2021. This is a good baseball team. It's a team that is very versatile, dynamic, a bunch of good athletes, not only on the position playing the position players, but also pitching staff wise. You know, you got sinkers and cutters and sliders and curveballs and fastballs up, fastball down, change-ups. And, you know, we're not one-dimensional. So we have a good pitching staff. And I'm very excited about what the organization has done since I got here in November. I said it a few days ago. If you look at who we were in November 5th or 6th, whatever it was, to where we at now, we are a lot better. And that's what we can control right now. And I'm very happy with the players that we have and what Haim and the group is doing to keep getting better, which is exciting. As far as me, Johnny, it was fun to drive here to JetBlue Park the last few days. It's fun to tell the family that I'm working. It's fun to be around the players. It's fun to be with the Boston Red Sox. It's fun to be back in baseball. And I miss the game. As you guys know, I've been around this game since I was 4 years old, and although I watch from afar, it's not the same feeling. And I'm glad that, ownership and the front office and the Boston Red Sox, they trust me and that I'm here managing this team.
Hey, Alex, you said earlier that this team has a chance to be a contender. Do you see this team as a championship contender, a team that is in the mix? So how do you view it in terms of the definition of what that means to be a contender?
I mean, we have a good team, and we have a chance to play in October. We do. We have a good baseball team, very balanced, very versatile. So, you know, if you get to October, you only have to win 11 or 12, whatever it is, you know. You take care of business in October, but we have a chance to play in October.
You also addressed the rotational depth as well. And obviously Tanner Houck was a guy that opened a lot of eyes last year. Is it too early to tell how he's going to play into the rotation and what his role may be?
Yeah, it's too early, but very impressed, very physical. He plays a part, you know, of a starting pitcher. He worked hard in the offseason. I know his goals, you know, and everybody knows our goals. It's just a matter of, you know, see what's best for the team, for the organization. But looking forward to see him compete. You know, I saw him on TV. He was impressive. He threw a bullpen today, and it's impressive to see him on the mound. And I'm happy that we're going to work together.
But he's not coming in with a big league spot, though. He has to – you're going to figure out where he's going to end up, basically?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Of course, Eduardo Rodriguez missed all of last season as a result of contracting COVID-19, and as a result of that, developing myocarditis, a heart condition, which had him basically doing nothing for a period of months and resting, relaxing, and trying to get his heart back to a place where he could resume activities. He's at that place, he's resumed full activity, and he's confident about what he is going to be able to do this season. Hopes to be an innings eater, hopes to not miss any starts. Here is Eduardo Rodriguez.
Physically, I feel great. I feel 100%. Like Cora said, I threw a bullpen 2 days ago, and it feels really good. And, I mean, I'm really excited to be here after everything I went through last year. Had the chance to be here again and be with the guys, with everybody here. Had me really excited, you know.
Eduardo, can you talk a little bit about what you went through and kind of how, you know, challenging that time period was with COVID and obviously the myocarditis following that and some of the thoughts that went into your head perhaps about the future of a baseball career?
I mean, at the beginning when I got COVID, like I say, like I meant to tell you guys, when I got COVID, what you're thinking on pass through that and be healthy after all that, you know what I mean? And thanks God I had the chance to survive that part and be available to get back to baseball after they clear me and they say you're ready to go, you can start doing everything now. And after that, I just start working out, do everything that I can do to get back 100%, and now I'm here, man. I'm here and ready to go.
Do you appreciate things a little bit more after going through an experience like that? You know, being at spring training, being around the guys, throwing a bullpen, you know, things that, you know, maybe you took for granted a little bit in the past.
I enjoy it, man. I just, like I say, and thanks God that I had the opportunity to be back here again. I enjoy every time I go out there, every time I had the ball in my hand and I had a chance to throw a bullpen, to throw a play catch, or even like talk to the guys and everything. Just being here is a really blessed to have the chance to get back here, you know what I mean? Because you see a lot of people, the troubles and everything they have, people dying and all that with that. So have the chance to be back here is something that I really feel happy about it.
Chris Sale underwent Tommy John surgery last year, and his recovery map looks like a June to July return for Chris Sale. And you know, Chris Sale's not a kid anymore either, and he's hoping that this is going to provide some extra life to his career, this time off, the restoration of the elbow with the Tommy John. He is going to be 32 years of age on the 30th of March. And Chris Sale has become a leader, a mentor for this Red Sox team. I talked with him about that and also being patient in returning.
Chris, can you talk a little about your evolution as a mentor? I mean, you mentioned getting to know Tanner Houck a little bit. At what point in your career did you start to take on more of that role, being the guy that was giving information as opposed to getting information?
Well, I dropped out of school and I was not a psychology major, so I don't know if, you know, I'm all that. But, I mean, through the years you learn stuff. And I was obviously very lucky at a young age and through my career to always have great veteran leadership. And you know, I'm not going to sit here and pinpoint a date and say this was the day I became a leader, but, you know, the evolution of that is a combination of the people I've been around, the things I've learned, and just my experiences. And it's not that I know something they don't know. I just might be able to say it in a different way or present it differently. And that's something I'm excited about doing. You know, I'm obviously not playing baseball, and I'm making a lot of money to do it. I better bring something to the table. And that's one of those things that that I think I can do up front while I'm not on the field bringing, you know, wins to the table, you know, helping these young guys out and you know, answering questions and sharing experiences and you know, helping them grow. Like what happened with me. You know, I had great veterans around me early on to teach me how to be a big leaguer, how to be, you know, a starting pitcher, how to be in the bullpen, how to be tough, how to get through stuff on days. And that's the next step.
And also, your expectations for the group, and do you think it'll be difficult to be patient if, you know, you see how you could affect the team in a positive way during the course of the season?
I don't really understand the question, but with baseball, I mean, you got to be patient. This is you're going to fail, you're going to succeed, and then you got to handle it. You got to do what you got to do. But there's no doubt. Like I said, we've had some turnover. We got some young guys, but the talent is there. It's just about going out on the field and doing it. You know, on the field when the lights are flicked on, and that's what we're here to practice. That's what we're here to get ready for. And like I said, I'm confident that we're going to be able to do this, make some noise.
That's Chris Sale right there. Bruins head outdoors. They're at Lake Tahoe on the state line between Nevada and California for their contest tomorrow against the Philadelphia Flyers. I talked with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy. Hey Bruce, how are you? Wanted to ask a couple questions. First off, you know, do you like the outdoor game mostly just kind of as a one-off, or do you like all the variables and different, you know, thoughts and philosophies about how to go about playing the game more than the indoor side? And also, would you like to, you know, see something in New England perhaps moving forward in the White Mountains or Green Mountains and kind of create an environment where this continues?
Well, I like it because it's different, and it is. They are memories. I mean, and you're in this game for a long time. The best memories are obviously Stanley Cups, right? Any player will tell you that. Playoff victories, the friendships you make in the game. So to me, these memories are good. So I enjoy doing them. This one was a little farther probably for us to travel in Philly than obviously Colorado and Vegas. But, you know, that's the luck of the draw sometimes. So for that part, I enjoy having them and whatever goes along with it, which is usually a positive experience. Your schedule gets thrown off a bit, like the game time, you know, they've talked, you know, I've changed it and looked at different things. And our practice, like I said this morning, you have to adjust, but that's fine. You know, you just go out and, like I said, try to stay loose. And as for New England, I think like everything else, the first outdoor game probably gave a lot of different ideas to future ones, right? They see how it goes, like a lot of things. And it's like, wow, well, we could do this here. And so now you get an outdoor one with no fans. Would owners want to do that again when you have the ability to have fans after missing out on fans for this long? I don't know. That's a question that goes, you know, higher up the food chain. But I could certainly see it being done in the future at places similar to Tahoe. Where those places are, I don't know. As for New England, you know, they've had a number of games there, and then makes you wonder where would the next one be if it was, you know, one with fans. So. And I think that they'd have no problem selling the game. So I think that's what they're also looking for. You want to be able to sell the game in the right environment. So and New England's a hockey hotbed. So definitely worth the conversation down the road. But I do believe, let's see how this weekend goes. You will see more games like this without fans in a certain scenery. You know, if like I said, everyone can agree on the process of no fans.
Seems like the glare is going to be an issue watching the Avalanche and Golden Knights game, which takes place here on Saturday. It's going to be a challenge for goaltenders. I asked Tuukka Rask about that. Hey, Tuukka, just how do you go about trying to deal with the glare and the problems that may exist? You mentioned kind of having to fight through it. Is there, you know, anything specific, and is it how just mentally challenging is it for a netminder to be going into a situation where you know you are going to have difficulty seeing the puck if that glare is a problem?
Well, I mean, this, like Marcia said, we can, there's a lot of things we can't control. Like, weather is one of them. The sun is one of them. Like, there's nothing I can do about it. But I think wearing the eye black, that helps a little bit with the glare. But obviously, if the sun's in your eyes and you have to look up, that won't do anything. So maybe wear sunglasses. That's another option. Other than that, there's really nothing more you can do. But I'm not worried about it. It's just, you know, things are out of our control. And
also talked with Patrice Bergeron. Hey, Patrice, from a hockey standpoint, is there a need to kind of simplify things in this environment? How do you go about approaching it, you know, from that perspective? You think this will be different as well, being that it's not in a stadium, and it seems like there's a more issue with the sun glare?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's that's what I've noticed over the last few, you know, outdoor games that I've had, is that you need to simplify your game. The fact that you're outdoors, the fact that there's, you know, no fans around you or no stands, it kind of makes it a little, it's a bit of an adjustment early. And then, so you definitely need to keep things simple. Don't overthink and play the game ultimately. You know, we've been doing this since most of us have been 5 years old. So it brings back a lot of memories, and just try to enjoy the event and stay in the moment and take everything in.
Really nice win for the Celtics last night. They knocked off the Atlanta Hawks by a 121-109 final, as it was Kemba Walker, huge for the Seas. 28 points for Boston, 6 assists in the contest to go along with 5 boards. Jason Tatum, great as well, 25 for him, along with 8 rebounds and 6 assists. Tristan Thompson, another strong game. He had 17 and 5 for Boston. The bigs combined for 42 points. Thompson, Tice, as well as Robert Williams. Let's hear from Brad Stevens.
We looked fresher. We had 2 starters back. I mean, I think that some of that stuff is like, you expected to play better tonight. The result wasn't what we wanted Wednesday, but we didn't do all bad things Wednesday either. We looked a little bit more like ourselves. We protected the paint a lot better. We got back in transition a lot better. And that continued all the way until, you know, we let go of it a little bit there in the fourth when we had the big lead. So I think that's something that, you know, hopefully we can build off of those good times, those good things.
Chris Ryan.
Yeah, I wanted to get you to expand a little bit about that, because it seemed like the effort was really good early on, but it was sustained throughout. And the challenge obviously has been getting big wins and then getting big wins after that. Do you feel like this is going to be different because of how you guys won?
Well, we have tough opponents. I mean, winning an NBA game is really hard. So, like, we could play really well on Sunday and get beat. These guys are talented, really well coached. You know, it's just the way it goes. But the difference between this stretch coming up, other than Wednesday, is that, knock on wood, we have people. We have some of our guys back. Obviously, we won't have Smart, but, you know, very rarely it feels like in this stretch have we gone game to game where we have a similar rotation or a similar lineup. And I think that's challenging for guys to get into their own rhythm, and it's challenging for a team to ever build on anything. And so hopefully we can build on playing well. Whether that means we win or lose, I don't know. We'll find that out, you know. But hopefully we start putting together games where we play well back to back to back and go from there. And I do think continuity will help us.
Also talked with Kemba Walker.
Your stat line obviously is really good tonight, and you've had solid performances really over the last 4. I'm curious as to how you feel about where you're at, A, and B, how much do you enjoy this type of a matchup with Trae Young, where you're playing him hard on D on that side of things, and you're also, you know, filling it and scoring on the other end?
I feel really good. Having fun, just getting stronger every day. As far as playing against Trae, I mean, I just love to play, regardless of who it is, to be honest. He is a great player. I'm always going to take the challenge. But, you know, it's really all about my teammates. You know, those guys were just in the right spots, communicating, just helping me on defense. You know, it's no one guy, you know, that's going to stop him. So, yeah, it's just fun when you're playing together and, you know, things are going well. You know, when you play hard, everything just takes care of itself for the most part.
Here's Jason Tatum.
Hey, Jason, I want to ask you about Kemba's performance tonight and over the last couple of games. And you talked over, or after one of the games previous, about how you and Jalen kind of need to find ways to get him a little bit more comfortable. Have you done certain things to get him more comfortable? And what do you think of the way he's been playing?
Yeah, he's been playing. I mean, you could tell he's coming along. Each and every game, he just looks like just a lot more like himself. And that's what, you know, we all expected. So hopefully we can just get him out there more often.
Here is Celtic center Tristan Thompson.
Hey, Tristan. Obviously, the Biggs performance was big in the win tonight. How important do you think you guys performing collectively, particularly moving the basketball, is for this group in future success?
You talking about the Biggs or just in general?
The Biggs.
Biggs, I think it's very crucial. I think with Kemba, JT, and JB, the amount of attention they draw, whether it's in pick and rolls or wide pin downs, I think especially saw with JB these last two games where he's taking that next step in terms of fighting the bigs on the roll or the late lob. And I think for a guy like him who is so athletic and gets downhill and is really a threat at the rim, he's going to draw attention, especially with those bigs that, you know, we're going to be open and we're going to, you know, find the right gap in space. And it's on them to make that play because, you know, I play with great players and they know early if you can get the bigs involved. Then the big that's guarding the five, whether it's me, Tice, or Rob, they got to make a decision now because they know we've been scoring. And most bigs, if you ask them, they hate when their man scores. So if we score early, going into the second half, guards will have layups and floaters, and they'll get their points.
Season 15-14. It's been up and down for Boston throughout the course of this year. More on them next on the Press Pass on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health. This is the Press Pass here on 1-9, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. Press Pass is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out RiverbendCMHC.org. Appreciate joining us for the show. I am Chris Ryan. This segment brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. Boston Celtics not in a great place right now. They're 14-14. On the year and have had a number of embarrassing losses over the last week and looked like they're going to turn things around after a win against the Nuggets on Tuesday night, but they lost on Wednesday to the Hawks 122-114 and took a step backwards after taking a step forward. That's basically been the way the Celtics have been this year. They've had some key wins. You thought that they're going to get going and they didn't. Opening night against the Bucks, Clippers out west, the game on Tuesday against the Nuggets. You think that those are going to propel the Celtics to go on a win streak, but that just hasn't happened. They've been inconsistent, and they've been basically their record, which is 14-14 on the season. They're playing against the Hawks once again tonight. They've also seen their defense get lit up by two star players over the last couple of games as Trae Young dropped 40 on them on Wednesday, and on Tuesday night, it was Nikola Jokic with 43 points. Jason Tatum dropped 35 in the loss to the Hawks as the Celtics fell 122-114. I talked with him post-game about why the Celtics can't seem to stand success.
Hey, Jason, you've had, you know, some key wins this year, the Clippers game, you know, obviously the Nuggets game too, and there's been an inability to kind of build off of that and let those spiral. Why do you think that's been a challenge for you guys this year and getting that win streak going?
That's a tough question. I wish I knew. I mean, we want to go on runs and like we did early in the season. But I mean, like you said, it's just growing pains, you know, fighting adversity. You know, I believe it's going to make us, you know, more together and make us tougher in the end. But yeah, I think this is just a part of it. But, you know, we got good spirit. We got a good group. You know, we care. You know, it's just tough right now.
Also spoke with the Celtics' Tristan Thompson, who had 14 points and 7 rebounds in the loss.
Hey, Tristan, over the last few weeks, you guys have had, you know, key wins against the Clippers and last night against the Nuggets. Why do you feel there's been an inability to kind of build upon those wins and let them, you know, build into a win streak?
Yeah, I know. I know one thing. Our team gets up for those big-time games, and at the end of the day, that's what you want. You want guys ready to compete against the top teams in our league, which is a good thing. The problem we're running into right now is keeping it at the level of a consistent basis. Like you said, whether it's Sac or Detroit and, you know, even this Atlanta team, we got to bring the energy from within. Of course, having our fans in the arena would definitely give us a lot of boost and energy, but the reality is we don't have them right now. So we've got to do it collectively as a group. And we just got, it's got to come from all 15 guys. We can't rely on the coach to give us the energy. We can't rely on the fake sound. It's got to be, you know, all of us collectively. And that's what we got to string together right now.
And again, it's frustrating because the Denver game looked like it could be one of those games where you lose back-to-back against two of the worst teams in the NBA, and the Pistons and the Wizards. You play a really good team in the Nuggets, and you have a great sustained effort through the course of the contest. You think this is something that's going to ignite this group. You win 112-99. You get great performances off the bench. Jaylen Brown is really good, drops 27 points in the game. And you think this is going to be something that's going to propel the group moving forward. Kemba plays well in that game, but it just didn't happen. They didn't have Kemba. Of course, they've been without Marcus Smart and also Daniel Tice. So there is significant injury issues in the depth that's being tested. But you were hoping that the Nuggets game was going to propel the Celtics team forward. And that's what I talked with Jaylen Brown about post-game.
Hey, Jaylen, just how significant is it, you know, when you need a win, when you need to make adjustments, to be able to go out and do it in your experience, to prove to yourselves perhaps what type of a team, you know, you can be?
It's great. You know, we need wins like that, you know, some wins to get some good opponents and things like that, because that can carry over into next games and stuff like that. So today was a good win. Let's see if we can build off.
You hear from Kemba Walker in just a little bit after the Wizards game. I'm going to reference it here in this interview with Brad Stevens. Kemba called him out and said, we got to play harder. We got to play harder as a group. And that message was certainly heard in the Nuggets game.
Hey, Brad, Kemba post-game against the Wizards, and you've talked about the need for this team to play harder, particularly on the defensive end. What do you see in that realm tonight?
Well, I mean, I think we all were really disappointed after the Washington game. I do think that we, you know, that game, as I look back on it, wasn't as unpredictable as maybe I felt like at the moment. However, it's how you respond to those things, and I think that that was better. You know, we didn't lose Friday night against Detroit because we didn't play hard. You know, I thought we played hard. We just missed some opportunities, and they made some opportunities. So hopefully Sunday's more of an anomaly, and it's one of those games throughout the year and the schedule where you look back and it was just that. That said, we just have to play better basketball, and that's what we're trying to build towards. We are imperfect, as everyone knows, and we're just going to do our best to be as good as we can be and hopefully build off tonight.
Aaron Nesmith had a really nice game for the Celtics. He had 9 points. He shot 2 of 4 from three, but it was his effort plays. Getting back and had questionable block in transition. It looked like it may have been a foul, but got back in transition, made a play, diving on the floor. And Nesmith was a guy who's expected to come in and be a kind of a shooter. And that's basically it. Come off screens, stick shots from the three-point arc. But he's got to contribute in other ways if he's going to stay on the floor and if he's going to contribute to winning for the Boston Celtics.
Aaron, what is the adjustment like to making those winning plays, whether it's, you know, diving for the loose ball like you were talking about before, the block, or sticking a three, as compared to what you've had in the past where you're a consistent, reliable scorer? Like, is there a mental adjustment that's take place where you're thinking about, this is what I need to do to bring energy in these moments where I can, you know, spur the group?
I'm just trying to do whatever the team needs me to do, you know, at the moment. In the game, sometimes we need energy. There's no crowd, there's no fans. So, you know, for some guys, it's hard to get up and play with a lot of energy. And so, you know, coming off the bench for the starters, for the rest of the team, just trying to be an energy boost, an energy guy, a guy that helps other guys play harder and, you know, guys that helps us towards winning.
Robert Williams contributed big time as he had 8 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 steals in this contest. And here is Rob Williams on his performance, the bench performance, but also what it's like to play against one of the most dynamic players in the league, Nikola Jokic, who had a tremendous 43-point game against the Celtics.
Hey, Rob, 2 questions. One, what role do you think the bench played tonight in providing the, you know, the energy that this team needed to win? And second is on Jokic. Is he the most difficult big to guard in the league?
I feel like the bench obviously brought great energy, but I feel like it was all around, really just positive vibes, something that we've been talking about. And, you know, as far as Jokic, man, he's a great player, bro. Obviously making me better defensively. I love going up against him.
Also talked with Peyton Pritchard, as Pritchard has been a plus guy for the Celtics this year. He had 7 assists in the game against the Denver Nuggets.
Hey, Peyton, what have been the biggest lessons for you from your rookie season? And have you had to go about kind of changing anything in terms of how you go about impacting, you know, the game and trying to make a maximum impact as a guy that comes in off the bench and is looking to spark and provide energy?
For me, it's just always coming in with energy and finding the flow of the game. So, you know, like I said before and earlier this year, like, it's not always going to be offensively. You know, I can try to create a spark defensively or getting an offensive rebound. Some way I can affect the game. That's my role on this team, is to come in and provide a spark somehow.
Again, it seemed that the Wizards' loss on Sunday, getting blown out of the road against the worst team in the NBA at that point in time, record-wise, was going to be a rallying point for the team. And I talked with both Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown about that back-to-back. Hey, Kemba, just how do you view this moment for this group coming off 2 really tough losses? And obviously, you know the way that the team's played over the last several weeks. How do you view this moment, and how do you turn it into a positive?
I don't know. We just got to figure some things out. Positive, it ain't many positives, I'm going to be honest. We're not good right now. But it's very controllable. You know, I don't think it's anything that's uncontrollable. I think it's, you know, it's us, you know, as a whole. You know, we just got to be better. You know, I think I could do a better job, you know, just getting my teammates prepared to play a game. You know, we'll get better. You know, we some very disappointing, you know, losses. We're just not playing the way that we know that we're capable of playing, and, you know, that has to be fixed and soon.
Hey, Jaylen, just kind of how do you view, you know, this moment coming off of today? Like, do you feel like this is one of those potential kind of rock bottom, build up from here type of moments for the group? Or what is your thought process at this point?
It could be. It's up to the mentality of, you know, everybody. How we come in every day and prepare to work. If you let it be, you know, a rock bottom mentality, and that's what it's going to be. Come to play, then it'll show. And today we weren't very good.
Celtics have dealt with significant injuries through the course of Brad Stevens' time in Boston, but they've been able to play through it. They've been able to have positive results, and he's been able to get the most out of his group. And obviously that's been different this year, and I was wondering why, and talked with Brad Stevens about that. Over the last number of years, obviously there have been times you've had to play without your core players, and you've been able to adapt as a group. And this year, you've had the same circumstance, but bit different results overall. So has there been anything that has led to you not having the results you want in making adaptations?
Well, you know, I think we're, you know, obviously there are some games that you go through that you lose, that you have a chance to win, that you'd like that back. But I also think there's some games that we won that the other team could say that too. So I think this is kind of who we are right now. And, you know, I think that if you compare it year to year, I would say that obviously just, you know, there's a lot more unknown, I'd say, this year than there maybe was in the last couple. So those are just things that you learn as you go through your time together, as new players adapt to the league, as young players, you know, and show what they're capable of or show how consistent they can be. And then, you know, as new players adapt to your team that aren't young. So I would just say that there was more known in previous years.
And Marcus Smart finally is on the mend for the Celtics, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon. Hey, Marcus, hope all is well with you. Just wondering how things are progressing in terms of the healing of the injury, how you're feeling, and if there's any sort of a timeline for your return.
Feeling good. Each day, you know, I'm feeling better. obviously, you know, nowhere near to where we wanted to be to coming back. But we knew that. We're really just taking it slow and just taking it day by day. There's really no big timeline I can give because, like I said, we're taking it day by day. It's only been, tomorrow makes 14 days. So, you know, my body is definitely healing the way that we expected it to. But it's definitely going to take some time. We'd rather be safe than sorry.
That is Marcus Smart. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health. This is the Press Pass here on KXL 199, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. The Press Pass is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health. Boston Bruins are out in Lake Tahoe to take on the Flyers tomorrow in the outdoor game. Boston Bruins have lost two games in their last two contests. In their previous 13, they had not lost but once. So a bit of a losing streak for the Bruins. They've dropped two in a row after falling to the Devils on Thursday night in Boston by a final of 3-2. David Krejci left that game due to injury, and a lot of discussion leading up to the contest was moving David Pastrnak off of the Bergeron and Marchand line and putting him side by side with Krejci, who did leave with that lower body injury. I talked with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy about that decision, and we also got a little discussion about fashion and NHL coaches. Hey, Butchie, want to get back to Pastrnak and switching lines up for a second. And how much of it is wanting to have that net front presence, having, you know, that heavy forward on each of those top three lines? Is that a big part of it, or is it more trying to just switch up the dynamic as you're referencing to get more scoring production?
Well, it's all about production at the end. What makes us the best team, the hardest to play against? And people make arguments both ways with the Bergeron line staying together. I mean, they've been an excellent line for us, and teams do not enjoy playing against that line. As long as the other lines are, you know, contributing, then I think we're a really hard team to play against. But, you know, right now that's not happening as much as we like. So move a piece here or there. That's the thinking behind it. Some of it is health, you know, like who's available. So sometimes you don't have a choice. You got to move things around or keep a line together because it helps you win games for 2 weeks. If that's the case, so be it. I mean, you're always got to stay a little bit ahead here of the curve and not fall behind and get your points, right? So whether it's power play or a dynamic line, when it comes to the offensive side of things, as a coach, you're just trying to make sure that, you know, you can win yourself some games. You try to stay in the moment as much as possible while we're building for something in the future. Because we've seen that, you know, how it plays out in the playoffs if you're not getting it up and down the lineup. So we're trying to balance both the whole time. And then you got some new pieces. Richie comes in, and we didn't really see the true Nick Richie last year. So now where does he fit? Frederick, we're trying to incorporate younger guys, bigger, you know, pushes a Lindholm or someone else out of a spot. Maybe Bjork goes lower in the lineup. So there's always stuff you're tinkering. How are those guys doing? What's a fair shake for them? How long do they need, et cetera, to build chemistry? So there's a lot of that. And Craig Smith, you know, proven guy in the league, but where is he going to best fit? You know, we can slot him in where we want in the summer when we sign him and say he's a good fit here, but until you see it, you don't know. So there's a lot of that tinkering going on. I can't imagine we're the only team that has to move some pieces around to see what, you know, what looks the best. Then you got a 56 game schedule instead of 82. So you got to factor that in as well. So there's a lot that goes into it. And then I'm almost getting away from your original question, but at the end of the day, I know Paulson is a good player, no matter who he plays with. And size on a certain line. Yeah. You'd love to balance it out perfectly, but they're not the biggest guys, Pasta, Marsh, and Bergie, but they're all hard, and they're hard to play against, so they will get a net presence. So they don't need a huge guy in that line. So it's, again, you know, what are players' strengths? How do they complement each other? Does it make you a better team in the long run? That's how we try to configure it. I've always believed if you could have one big line, I think it's nice to have to start games or throw out there when you need to change the sort of the direction of the game. So that part's, you know, for me as a coach, I think is great to have in your back pocket, but are you going to go out of your way to do it and hurt the team? No, but if it happens to sort of organically happen, then I like that part of it. So again, we're still sorting through it all, but it would be nice if, you know, that third line with Coyle and Smith and Freddie developed that identity. And was that line as we go along, but we'll see how it plays out.
And another question is kind of off the beaten path, and with the outdoor game, coach's attire is always kind of a big part of that. And I was thinking about the fact that hockey coaches are the last coaches that wear, you know, suit and tie, with the NBA moving to more of a branded, you know, non-suit and tie approach. Are you a guy that likes the way things are, or would you like to see more of a transition to what the NBA is doing?
Well, I got to tell you, this year the rinks with no fans in there are a lot colder. So I'm a fan of Torts wearing like three layers of sweaters under a suit coat, because I'm telling you, it gets cold on the bench. And you don't have the same energy in the building. So that part of it, but no, I think a suit and tie looks sharp. So I'm fine with it. I think the outdoor game is always hit or miss depending where you are. There's always a theme the players like to do. So there's usually something that, you know, is a little bit different. Sometimes they just tell us, here's your jacket. You're all wearing these bomber jackets. So have a, you know, so you don't even have a say. So I'm not that big on style, but I do believe there is tradition. I love the old days when you look at the games from, you know, the 50s or 60s, and the coaches are all wearing their fedoras. I think it looks great. So I'm a little bit more that way. But I get it. If the trend is to be a little bit looser and the hockey goes that way, I'll be fine with it. I'll adjust.
Thanks, Bruce. David Krejci did not travel, according to reports, out to Lake Tahoe for the game against the Flyers. We'll see what happens with David Pastrnak, and if Cassidy puts Pasta back with Bergeron and Marchand on that top line. Speaking of Pasta, I spoke with him earlier this week. Hey, Pasta, do you change anything in how you approach the game with your paired alongside, you know, Krejci versus Bergeron? Is there anything that you do differently in how you approach it?
Yeah, how I said, the good thing is I have chemistry with all three of these guys, you know, so I know what kind of game with Bergeron and Marsh. It's more like, you know, really, really fast game, get on a forecheck, try to steal some pucks and get it quicker, you know, some quick play on the net. And obviously it's been working for us as three. It's been like we try to play fast every time I play with Bergeron and Marsh. And with Krejci is a little bit different. You know, he slows the game a little bit and gives the winger or gives me time to pick up a little bit more speed. And that's the thing that I know that when Krejci gets it and it's maybe a couple of feet ahead of me or behind me, you know, I just need to be ready for the puck or pick up the speed and I know he can find it. So it's a little bit slower game, but how I said it's absolutely no problem for me. I have chemistry with all three guys and it's a little bit different game, but I like it both. Sometimes it's a good chance, you know, for the team to get little lines mixed up. You know, JD has a great opportunity. I think he's been playing really good and hard when I was heard in their line. So, you know, hopefully it's going to be fun. I'm excited for Thursday. Obviously, there's a lot of days also, and we all want to just play.
How important do you think is your personality to the group? In Butch was talking about this the other day, that Bergie and Krejci and a lot of the guys are very professional, very serious, and you obviously take the game seriously, but like to have fun in playing it. Do you see that rubbing off on the other guys at times? Do you think it's important to have that type of personality, particularly with this group?
I'm still pretty young, although it doesn't feel like it anymore. When I get day off, I just feel like shit next day. So I feel like I'm getting a little older, you know, and it's, again, that's, I think every young guy in this room, you know, should appreciate or really appreciate what we have here from the leaders, you know. How you said that this guy's been here for so long and we see them every day just being such a professional and working hard every day, you know. Like Bergeron and Krejci been here over 10 years and they still come to the ring every day and warming up, working out, go practice, recover, you know. So not every young guy has the opportunity to learn from guys like this. So, you know, I just try to follow the leaders and you know, that's, I think that's all, every young guy what you do. If you follow Bergie, then your game can only go up.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Also talked with the Bruins' Charlie Coyle.
Do you feel like this is a bit of a heavier team up front than it has been in previous years, that you guys are a little more difficult to play against? Is that part of the MO this season?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I think, you know, you want to be a team that can play kind of any type of situation. I think we fit that role. You know, no matter who we're playing against, we can adjust. But, you know, we try to stick to our game, what we do well, use our speed, use our size. And then to each individual, you know, everyone's got their own individual skill set that you can use for the betterment of the team. And that's what we try to do. And you find your line mates, find that chemistry, and things have clicked. And I still think we have more to, you know, more to give, and we can be better. And that's a great sign. But yeah, I guess that's a fair assessment, but I think we still use our speed to our advantage too. That's something that we have. And, it's just kind of everyone doing their part together, and that's what's given us success early on.
And how difficult have the long layoffs been with the COVID canceled games? And obviously, you know, there's that are going to get made up down the road. It's going to get a little bit hectic in terms of the schedule. What's been your take on having this extra time in between games?
I don't think it's been hard. I think you just use it to an advantage, your advantage, you know. That's all you can do is stay positive. It's all right, well, if we're not, you know, game gets postponed, we'll use it as good rest or a good practice day to get better and work on some things. So that's all you got to do in these situations. You never know what's going to kind of rise and come up, but use it to your advantage, stay positive, and do what you can, either a day off and rest the legs, and you can mentally reset, whatever you know you need to do for yourself and the team, and go from there.
As the Bruins hit the quarterway point of the season after their loss to the Islanders, I checked in with both Tuukka Rask and Patrice Bergeron. First, here's Tuukka.
Hey, Tuukka, a quarter of the way through the season, just your thoughts on where the team is at this point in time. And this is obviously one of those difficult back-to-back games against a good team. Your thoughts on where the team is?
I think we're doing great. Obviously, there's always room to improve. I think past couple of games, our starts have been something that we wanted to focus on and playing the full 60. But I think overall, we played very solid hockey defensively and then also offensively. So, but I don't think we're ever satisfied. It's a long season, no matter what. And I think we're just going to be working every day towards the perfect game, and hopefully we'll get there.
What have you noticed about the intensity of these games, you know, quarter way through at this point? We're obviously without the crowd, that's a challenge to some extent in terms of providing energy, but it seems like the games have had, you know, a playoff type, you know, intensity. It's been tight checking. It's been, you know,
Yeah. I think everybody's used to the no fans at this point. So it's not, you know, on anybody's minds anymore, but I think some games you notice kind of like you're just feeling it out for maybe a game or half a game. Nothing's really happening, and then once you're kind of going towards that third period, mid third period, the intensity starts to pick up. But then you have nights like today when there's two like kind of hard checking teams, and it's a heavy matchup right off the bat, and it kind of brings that intensity level up. So but I think it's been overall pretty good.
Also talked with Berge.
Quarter of the way through the season, just your thoughts on where the team is at this point in time. Are you guys what your record is, or do you see some deficiencies here and there that you'd like to address?
Well, I think we're, you know, you always want to address some things, and no matter what the record is, to be honest with you, I think that's what, you know, that's how you can have success in this league, is by, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror every time and after every game, looking at the video and making sure there's things that, you know, can be better. Put in some emphasis on the good things that we're doing. So yeah, I think it's there's definitely some things that we can improve and get better.
Jeremy Lauzon's been a big contributor for the Bees this year. He's been paired alongside Charlie McAvoy as the Bruins' top defensive pair, has impressed. The youngsters have had a big impact for the Bruins this year in 5-on-5 play.
Hey, Jeremy, just how much fun is this group having right now, knowing that you're coming to the rink each night with a pretty good chance to win?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of fun. I think it shows too on the ice. We're winning hockey games, and we have a pretty close group. So it's been really fun. Everybody around, like trainers, coaches, and older players, younger players. I think overall we have a really good group, and it's been really fun playing.
Bruce was talking about how important it is for this group to play a physical game, and you seem to enjoy yourself personally and the group playing that physical game. Is it important, though, to initiate and not necessarily, you know, respond, particularly in the first period?
Yeah. I think it's important to play physical, like you just said, for a hockey club. And it's really good to just initiate and not I'm thinking about the word right now. I don't know it, but if you hit, you don't hit again after that. I'm sorry, language barrier. But no, it's been tonight. I think we were really physical and it paid off for us. Retaliate. That's the word I was looking for.
Nick Ritchie's been a big part of the Bruins' success this year. He's acquired just prior to the trade deadline last season. Has had a big impact. He has a big body and is that power forward maybe that the Bruins have been missing for a while.
One of the big keys for you, whether it's on the power play or 5-on-5, has been being difficult to play against this year. What role do you think that's played in kind of the your overall structure of the Bruins' attack in the offensive zone?
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously a big guy can drive to the net and force their defense to defend and play around the crease and open up some room for line mates and make it hard on the other team.
That is Nick Ritchie. You've been listening to the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health. I am Chris Ryan.